Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Han Zhang. And the paper, my paper is titled "Efficient and Available In-Memory K-Value Stores with Hybrid Error Coding and Replication." The other two authors of this paper are Ming Kai Dong and Hai Bo Chen. We're all from Institute of Parallel and Distributed Systems at SGTU in China. In recent years, in-memory K-Value Store has become an important part in many large-scale systems. It could be used for data caching or further imported, supported in-memory database. Even recently, in-memory K-Value Store is popular for data caching. Supporting availability is still important for in-memory K-Value Stores. Otherwise, the servers would be disrupted when in-memory K-Value Stores crash because requests have to access the database. And recovering data from disk into memory is time-consuming. The primary backup replication is a common way to achieve availability, which is used in in-memory K-Value stores like RepCached and Redis. However, using primary backup replication means a lot of memory cost on replicas. The system that uses primary backup replication need to use n plus 1 times memory to tolerate m failures. And most replicas are rarely accessed, especially in some strongly consistent systems. Error coding is a space-efficient way to prevent data loss. It has been widely used in disk storage, for example, RAID and Windows Era storage. Systems that use error coding need to repair data when data loss happens, which leaves a lot of computing work and data transferring. And I think this is the most hated problem of error coding. Fortunately, both network and CPU has been largely improved in recent years. For example, the network bandwidth can reach 14 gigabits per second, and the encoding and decoding speed of CPU can also reach this level. So we think it is time for us to try error coding for in-memory data. So our goal is design a new K-value stores which is combined with error coding to achieve high availability and better memory efficiency. Intuitively, we think the system should work in this way. We can deploy key nodes for data and M nodes for parity, which while we store each key value pairs totally on only one of the data nodes. Thus, it could be friendly to forget operations, which is very important for with mostly workload. However, this design involves two challenges. One is overhead on excessively metadata update. The other one is the risk condition in online recovery. Metadata is usually achieved by scattered and linked data structure. For example, applications usually use hash table or binary search tree for index in memory, in which the items are scattered and linked. This means single operation on metadata could involve a lot of scattered modification. For example, about 4 to 7 scattered modifications on memory allocation, release, or key-value pair insertion and deletion. The most significant problem is the resize of the hash table and the recursive rotation of the binary search tree. So we think using error coding for prevent metadata loss is not a good choice. It complicates the implementation and have an obvious overhead for every set operations. And it would also limit the metadata design in the future. So our solution is also separates the data and metadata. We use error coding to prevent the data loss and still use primary backup replication to protect the metadata. We can achieve this by pre-allocating a virtual memory area for both data and parity. And multiplication in this era should agree with the error coding approach. And the metadata could be placed anywhere outside of this era. The second problem is about the risk condition in online recovery. The system needs to handle get and set operations during the recovery because they need to achieve high availability. However, set operations need to update updating on multiple nodes, and the recovery need to collecting nodes from multiple nodes. So, the interleaving of the set operation and the data recovery may could lead incorrect recovery. For example, in this figure, the collection happened in the half of our set operations and collected data and the parities are in inconsistent versions. And thus, the recovered data is unexpected. To solve this problem, we'll attach a timestamp for each set request and compress them in ordering. Thus, the timestamp of the last completed request could indicate the version of the data. We also propose an online recovery protocol to achieve consistent data recollection or collection, which involves three steps. In this protocol, data nodes first decide the data version, and the parity process provides the parities in the decided version. To understand how the recovery works, let me first describe an overview of our system for CITUS and how it handles set requests. CITUS consists of many error coding groups, which is the basic component in our system. In each error coding group, there are key data processes and M parity processes where K and M is configurable. The channel between each data process and the parity process need to be first in, first out, so we can easily guarantee the ordering of the requests. There are three important components in data processes. First one is the metadata, which includes the index information and allocation information. The second one is the memory error for storing data. The last one is logic timestamps. There are two important timestamps in data process. One is for the latest received set request. The other one is for the latest completed set request. And also, there are three important components in parity processes. The first component is for metadata. It has to replicate the metadata for all data processes in the same error coding group. The second component is the memory error for parity, which corresponds to the memory error for data on the data processes. The third one is also two timestamp vectors. One is for latest received set request, and the other one is for the latest completed set request from different data processes. Because the data processes are quite different from parity processes. For example, it needs less memory for metadata, and the tool has different workload on get and set operations. So to balance the workload, we chose an interleaved layout and evenly deploy the data process and the parity processes among the cluster. So let's see how CITUS handles set requests with two-phase committee. When the system received a set request, it first dispatches it to a corresponding data processes based on the hash value of the key. When data processes receive the requests, it first allocates the memory for the value and generates the diff between the new value and the original data stored in the allocated space. And then it increases the RT, the receive timestamp, and attach it to the request. Finally, it replaces the value in the request with generated diff and forwards the modified request to parity processes. When parity processes receive the forward request, it just buffers it and updating the corresponding element of RVT, and then send an acknowledgement back to the data process. Once data process received all the acknowledgments from the parity process, it's time to complete the request, so it can do the update for data and the index information in place. It also updates the ST, the stable timestamp, and send the commit request to parity processes. So, and when parity process needs to complete, when the parity process receives the commit request, it completes the buffer request and updates the metadata and the parity in place. And then it increases the corresponding element of SVT. So this is how the processors handle the SID request, and they see the recovery. Once the data process crashes, it's one parity process would be chosen as a recovery process to continue the services. It will first start a two-phase recovery. In the first phase, the recovery process synchronizes the parity processes to make them consistent in the field node. In the second phase, the recovery process can handle requests while repairing the data under an online recovery protocol. When there are multiple failures, a recovery leader will be selected among the recovery processes. In the preparation phase, recovery processes collect the corresponding element in RVTs from parity processes. It will choose the minimal one as a synchronized ST. If a buffered request from the field processes has a greater timestamp than the synchronized ST, it means it must not be received by all the parity processes and should be discarded. Parity processes have to complete all the buffered requests of which the timestamp is equal or less or smaller than the synchronized ST, and which is from the field data process. Once the preparation phase completes, all parity processes are consistent in the field processes. In other words, all parity processes has completed the same request that comes from the field data processes. So, after the preparation phase, recovery processes start to handle service and repair data. During the online data repair, the recovery works with a granularity of 4 kilobyte pages. The page repair happened when requests need to touch the lost page or in the background. And the repair work is under an online recovery protocol to guarantee the correctness. So this is a recovery protocol. If system wants to repair a page, the recovery leader would choose which parity nodes should participate in this recovery. Then it sends the decision to all alive data processes. When data processes receive the request from the recovery leader, it would send the corresponding data pages to the parity processes along with its ST. Parity processes would complete the sum of the buffered requests to synchronize their ST and do partial decoding. Once the parity process receives the ST and data pages from all allowed data processes. It sends the partially decoded result to recovery leader. And the recovery leader will finish the last step of the decoding and send the repaired data to other recovery processes. We implement our system on Memcached 1.4.21. We also implement a primary backup reflection version for comparison. The coding scheme we choose is ReSolomon, which is provided by the JReal library. So here comes the evaluation. Because of the limitation of our machines, we deploy server on our 5-node cluster and use 1 node to run YCSB as clients. All of the nodes are connected with 10 gigabit network. Because of the limitation of the client, we tried our best to build a smallest scale which only contains 5 error coding groups, and each error coding group has 3 data processes and 2 parity processes. So there's 15 data processes and 10 parity processes in total. For fairness, we also deploy 15 primary processes for primary backup replication and 15 processes for Memcached. All these processes have only one work thread. So here is the memory consumption evaluation results. This results shows that our system has obvious improvements compared with primary backup replication. Here, the ZIPF is means a lot of small value and a few large value, which agree with the ZipFan distribution. The performance overhead on error coding is quite small when the workload is read mostly. The cross-siters can perform with negligible overhead on 1-node failure, and only have a small performance degradation on double failures. The overhead on the CPU is not serious for read mostly workload, but when the set operations becomes more frequently, the cross-siters do have an impact on CPU utilization because of the error coding. So here's just some related work about separating work, error coding work, and replication work, and key value stores. So here's come the conclusion. We think replication approach is quite memory consuming for in-memory key value stores. And so we designed a cross-siters which combined error coding and replication to achieve efficient and available in-memory key value stores. The cross-siters could achieve better memory efficiency with low overhead compared with primary backup replication on read mostly workloads. Thanks. Any questions?
Hi, Ted Cho, Google. So I'm not really familiar with Memcached, but it surprises me that you're positing a world where you would actually dedicate 6 machines to handle 5 failures of Memcached. Is that actually a configuration that's very commonly used, and why? I'm just kind of curious about the motivation of, you know, the scenario that you're trying to optimize.
Well, I think... In fact, I know a little about the industry, but I think because if you're really in a cluster, some nodes will always play the role of the primary and also play the role of the backup. So all the nodes could be used for service. So I think this is a commonly way to support availability. So I think so this is just my opinion. So I think it could use your coding in this situation. So we can save more memory.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering, because this is a cache, right? So I think you're positing a world where you can't just simply restart with an empty cache and just let the cache fill up again from scratch, right? And so therefore, you need to dedicate a huge amount of resources and a huge amount of memory so that you never lose the contents of the cache. And I'm just kind of curious what motivates that in practice.
Kai Shen from Rochester. One more question is, I think the performance looks very good. I believe most of your latency tests were done in paper when there is no failure. Obviously, this is a system designed for when something fails. When one of the code chunk fails, I suppose you have to, every read will involve some kind of coding to work. Do you have latency numbers on how slow that will be compared to obviously, for the primary backup, you don't have to do any coding for failure cases.
Yes, we have evaluated the mode. Sorry, I don't remember the number. And I think during the recovery, the 99% of the request can be completed within 10 microseconds.
10 milliseconds.
Millisecond. And I think, and as I remember the original latency should be about maybe 500
microseconds?
Microseconds, yes.
That's 20 times slower.
So it still have some problem on the latency of the during the recovery. And however, because in my opinion, I think we didn't use the InfiniBand, so maybe RDMA something or something like this could reduce the latency in the future.
These are the throughput, yeah, but then I think latency, yeah. And you know, the network should not cause that much difference. The RDMA network, they're like a microsecond level differences. Here you're talking about thousands of microseconds, but that's okay. There are a bunch of them, yeah. All right, thank you.
Hi, Daniel Waddington from Samsung. I think what worries me about this particular work is that you've made a comparison to sort of vanilla Memcached, it's about 350K per second read operations. There are lots of solutions there out there today that will give you upwards of 10 to 20 million per second. And put a lot more stress on the network. So have you done any calculation in your solution to look at what point the network becomes the bottleneck, assuming you could get higher throughput on the Memcached side of things?
In fact, because the limitation of our class, so in fact, the evaluation, during the evaluation, the client is a really bottleneck. So it's very hard to evaluate on which points would the writes cause the bottleneck, cause the system become a bottleneck. So I can't give you the answer, I'm sorry.
Okay, so my advice is to, you know, remove the client as the bottleneck and, you know, imagine putting more load on the system. And you need to look at, you're basically making a trade-off that's putting more pressure on the network. And if you've got a key value cache solution that's much higher performance, then I'm not sure you're going to be able to tolerate that additional stress on the network.